Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Nashville Predators taking on the Carolina Hurricanes. Game one tonight between the Predators and the Hurricanes. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Frank on the text line says, the Preds just need to stay out of the penalty box, plain and simple. That's the biggest key. 5-on-5, you can hang. Special teams, not so much. Tolvanen will start at home in game three. You welcome back the Joe Feline. Richardson in for the two road games to start for his experience in the playoffs. So Frank saying, the key to the series for the Predators, keeping things 5-on-5 as much as possible because of Carolina's prowess on special teams. They've certainly been great in special teams.
Yeah, no, I mean, no doubt. I mean, they are elite, both units. So stay out of the box for sure. I mean, I think the Preds' penalty kill obviously has come a long way.
Yes.
If you want to talk about beginning of the year to now, but that's still, that's a tough assignment, and you got to get some of your own again. And that's where the biggest case for Tolvanen can be made.
Do you take any stock into the fact that the Preds only gave up two power play goals to the Canes all season? That the Canes had a great power play, but the penalty kill for the Preds did find a way to keep them in check.
I mean, yeah, I think you take some stock from it. Now, as we know, that can change in a hurry,
sure,
in the playoffs. But yeah, I think you take some stock from it. I mean, I think the best practice against Carolina and their power play, to Frank's point, is stay out of the box. Like, I think back to that Saturday game where the Predators had to win that one, and they did. Their power play wasn't good, but they only gave Carolina one opportunity on the power play. So, to me, that's the best formula. Don't give them a whole lot of time out there to change the game because they've got some guys that can absolutely do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think you take some confidence away from that if you're the Predators on their penalty kill units. And, Joe, to your point, I mean, it's night and day now to what it was to begin the season. I mean, they were so bad on the penalty kill to begin this season that there was really nowhere to go but up, and they've become way more consistent. They've been much better in that area. I still don't know if I would go as far to say it's a huge strength of this team now, but I would say that it's certainly, you at least feel comfortable that there's a good chance you're going to kill it off now if you're the Predators on the penalty kill. Whereas earlier this season, I mean, it was a total disaster. I mean, it felt like impending doom every time they went out there on the penalty kill.
Right. And, you know, obviously, you look at, especially Saros, but Rene too. I mean, like, goalie numbers, everything was skewed by, you know, especially a couple of those games. But it was a total mess. So it's been pretty good for a while now. Again, you don't necessarily want to test it out, even though you've had a lot of success, as Port said, even against this team. But it's, you feel pretty good about it. And, you know, the power play is, that's where, I mean, even with Tolvanen, I think it looked maybe as bad as it's looked against these guys in that Saturday night win, right? Like, couldn't get anything going at all.
Yeah.
With Tolvanen, I'd still be hesitant, you know, to feel like I still feel like your best chance is with him. But if it's that big of a difference 5-on-5 with a Richardson, with a Cousins, then, you know, I think physicality is at a premium, especially maybe early in this series.
So now the big question heading into this series, if you're the Predators, is can UC Saros keep this up? Obviously, I mean, we've talked about it a ton here on the show. He has been awesome for this team. When you start listing off reasons that the Predators have turned things around, UC Saros is at the top of that list. He's been amazing. He, in my opinion, has put himself in the Vezina Trophy conversation. We'll see what happens on that front. But he's just been outstanding for the Predators. But we've talked about it. The playoffs are a different beast, and it's a different animal coming up for UC Saros and the Predators heading into this series against Carolina. And this is, you know, really the first time that you're heading into a seven-game playoff series with UC Saros being the guy. We saw the qualifying round series last year against Arizona. The Predators lose in four. And I didn't think Saros was just bad in that series, but you look at the numbers, it's an .895 save percentage, a 3.22 goals against average. That's a far cry from the numbers that we've seen from UC Saros over the course of the last couple of months. I'm interested to see, number one, if he can keep that going with the layoff that we've seen now with UC Saros. It's been over a week since he's played a game at this point. So can he continue to play at the form that he was before the regular season ended? That's the number one question. But number two, how does he kind of handle the moment of this, of being the guy heading into the playoffs, really the first time in his career? This is going to be, I think, a discovery time for UC Saros and the Predators to figure out exactly what they have moving forward here at that position and whether or not he can be the franchise goalie. Like, earlier this season, when you and I talked about it, Joe, I felt like he was the bridge guy to the next guy. Certainly the way he's played the last couple of months, you feel great about UC Saros moving forward here. Can he be the long-term answer? And I'm talking 7, 8, 9 years. Like, can he be the next guy? I think we're going to begin to start to find out the answer to that beginning in this series against Carolina.
I agree. I mean, there's no outcome here that cements it either way, right? But, David Poile kind of said it the other day with that too. You know, it basically, like, it's what you do in the playoffs. And it was a question I asked him about Saros, but for something I wrote today, by the way, for The Athletic, about Saros. And I think he said it, you know, like, this is when you really determine what you are as a player. Now, it's interesting when you look at it, like, and it's a way smaller sample size, but it's a decent sample size at this point with Saros. I mean, his career numbers are right there with Pecorine's career numbers. Actually has a better save percentage, but he's nowhere, you know, in the realm, because Pecorine has had so many big moments, big games, big series, big wins in the postseason. You know, that's what defines you as a player. And I think that, and you can, if you want to be pessimistic about this, you could say, well, Saros was actually on a tear last year too, which is why he got the job, which is why it was pretty clear he was going to be the starting goalie heading into the bubble in Edmonton. And then, just wasn't good enough. But the difference there, obviously, is 5 months.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to keep the rhythm up. We'll see if he can keep the rhythm after a week. 5 months is kind of tough. And not to make an excuse, you got to be better than he was against Arizona. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with Steve Valiquette. Or Valiquette, which I'm not even sure how to say his last
Cat.
Name, but
not Quet.
Valiquette. Valiquette.
Porth is very adamant about that.
You
yes.
call him Valley.
I like it.
Well, that's good. I mean, he's not a guy that, you know, he wasn't an especially successful goalie in the league, but he bounced around. He's a coach, but he started this analytics company, and of course, Vingan gave me his number. He told me a lot of really interesting things, and one interesting thing that. In his company, you know, they consider slot shots now to be low danger if they're clear view. Basically, like, just like the position keeps advancing at an incredible rate. But, you know, Saros, so the goals he gave up last year against Arizona, he gave up like roughly like a low danger one a game, you know, which, and again, not just total garbage goals, but just kind of like, got to get that one.
Yeah.
And if you say that too often about a goalie in the playoffs, that goalie's going to lose. That team's going to lose, you know? And it's the low danger shots that really separate goalies, which is interesting too. Like the super difficult, like it's pretty consistent for NHL guys, you know? Like 1-3. It's the guy that consistently keep out the soft or whatever sort of softish, you know, kind of stuff that you'd like to see him stop. The guys that can consistently keep those out are the elite ones, and he's been the best goalie in this league for 2 months plus now.
So what you're saying is that Tristan Jarry is not one of the elite ones.
No.
After what happened yesterday in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Tristan Jarry, he's got some work to do.
Yeah, that was a toughie. That was not ideal. Yeah, that's exactly right.
You got some work to do on that. Well, I mean, Joe, I think back to the last time we saw UC Soros play. Like, as good as the Predators played in that game, and I think as great as you feel about that, if you're a Predators fan, there were two or three times in that game where Soros just had to make unbelievable saves. Like, Carolina is that good. They're going to find ways to get these high-danger opportunities. They're going to find ways to get their odd man rushes. Like, you're going to have to deal with that at some point if you're the Predators. And the bottom line is this. Like, Soros, if the Predators are going to win this series, Soros is probably going to have to steal a game or two, and he's going to have to, in every game, make some saves that you probably don't expect your goaltender to make. And he's done that for 2 months now. That's been a nightly occurrence with him at this point. So maybe you've gotten to the point with UC Soros that you do expect it at this point. But I think that's going to be the level he's going to have to play at if the Predators are going to win. Now, could UC Soros put up, you know, good numbers in this series and the Predators still lose? I think absolutely he could. I think, you know, if UC Soros is floating around a 920, 925 save percentage in this series, those are pretty good numbers. I still think the Predators could end up losing the series if that's the case. So I hesitate to say it's all whether or not the Predators win this series about how you feel about UC Soros in the playoffs moving forward. But I do think, just based on the way Carolina plays and the way that Soros has had to play the last couple of months, it's going to take the same level of play that we've seen for the Predators to win this series. I fully believe that heading into this matchup.
Look at the goal they had in that game. The one goal they had, it was just a tic-tac-toe. I think it was an odd man rushing. Like, no chance.
Yeah.
And they're gonna score. You know, he's not gonna shut them out. I mean, it's not realistic. The Preds could give up. You know, he could have a not very great goals against in this series and play great.
Yeah.
That's certainly possible. So there's more to it, but you got to keep out the stuff you should save. If you give up any like that, I think you're in big trouble. And at times, he is going to have to rise up and make some of those saves. Like you said, he had a couple of them in that game that were absolutely huge. You know, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him. There's no doubt about that. And we just haven't seen enough. I mean, we've never seen him in a hostile environment as a starting goaltender in the playoffs. So this is the first look at that tonight.
When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on UC Soros, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, including one area where maybe he's been a little subpar this season. That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the home for Nashville Sounds baseball. Tomorrow, the Sounds open a six-game homestand at First Horizon Park against the Gwinnett Stripers, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Nashville Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by 312 Pizza Company. Ryan Porth, you enjoyed a little Nashville Sounds baseball action this weekend.
I did. Saturday night.
Little Christian Yelich in town. It was fun stuff.
It was fun stuff. He made a nice running catch, and he walked a couple of times. It was good to see Yelly at First Horizon.
Yelly. You going to get you a Christian Yelich Nashville Sounds baseball jersey?
No. Probably not. I don't know how many of those they're going to make.
I don't know. Look.
There were a lot of Yelich Brewers jerseys in the crowd.
Hey, anytime you can get an MLB superstar in the park, that's a good thing. So it looked like a fun environment with the Nashville Sounds this weekend.
If you can name a line in one day, you can get a Christian Yelich jersey after one game.
That is true. You're absolutely right. Porth's got a confused look on his face right now. He doesn't know what you're talking about. We just had a conversation about this two segments ago. Naming the lines, the forward lines for the Nashville Predators.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, there we go. All right, he's back up there, back up to speed. Right now, talking Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, discussing UC Soros and the pressure that he faces heading into this series. And, Joe, you come out with a piece, as you mentioned, on TheAthletic.com, kind of breaking down what we've seen from Soros and the opportunity that lays ahead. including in conversation with Brian Boucher here, obviously, who is an analyst for NBC Sports, was on the call last night for Tampa Bay in Florida as well. Without giving your entire article away here, what were some of the takeaways that you had with that conversation with Brian Boucher?
Yeah, and Valiquette, not Valiquette, Steve, yes. Valiquette. God dang it. QU, you know? Come on, QU. Yeah, interesting stuff. Well, Boucher, you know, he's an interesting case too because, and I was actually going to get into this, but I didn't as much. But, you know, Boucher was, he was fine. I mean, he had some really good moments in his career. He wasn't like a star goalie. He had some runs. He had like this really long shutout streak at one point, you know, where he was absolutely on fire. And he talked a little bit about that, how like once you're on that wave, man, just who knows how long it'll last. You go with it. And sort of the idea of, okay, could Saros be a Binnington case right now? Now, Binnington was a rookie. Everybody knows the story. Blues were in last place at the beginning of January. They win the cup. He plays out of his mind. He hasn't been that good since. He's still been pretty good. I mean, he's the guy. I think, frankly, he's going to steal this series and shock the world because Call Your Shot is about calling shots, not making wimpy predictions.
That's
like Porth does. But regardless, I'm sorry. That was unnecessary. But, you know, it's interesting to think about Binnington. Think about the idea of, are you on a wave here? Or is Saros this guy? You know, who knows? I mean, is Saros going to be an elite goaltender in this league in the years to come? If that's the case, the Preds might want to, you know, pay him more money here as he comes up on his deal as a restricted free agent. And they will. But, I mean, if he has a great payoff, that could change that number too, by the way. But he talked just about even the rhythm thing too. I mean, it is possible that this week plus off could mess up Saros a little bit. I mean, it's possible, you know. But the Preds will take the rest, I think, for sure. And then with Valiquette, there's just a lot of stuff about goaltending that I found interesting. And the one thing about Saros that has not been great this year, I mean, so Valiquette, they break down every single shot in the league. He's got several teams as clients, but they break down every shot from the goaltender perspective and the shooter perspective. And, you know, they're trying to show shooters, like, see, an interesting thing too, and this may not be a revelation, people, you know, if you have a bunch of weak outside shots in a game, the goaltender you're facing is more likely to handle the high danger stuff because you've warmed that goaltender up. You know, the idea of don't waste your shots. You know, some people are like, yeah, shoot the puck, put it on net. Like, well, if you look at the data, it tells you that if that's your strategy, a lot of times you're going to actually face a goaltender who plays better. But the one thing Saros has not done great is on screenshots. He is above expected, according to Valiquette's data, on screenshots. Shouldn't be shocking. I mean, that's, I think, where the height thing can be an issue, yeah, right, relative to other goalies. But every other way you can look at a shot, and they've got broken plays. And I mean, I've looked at he's shared, like, you know, the way he breaks it down. I mean, every possible thing you can think of, you know, odd man rushes, broken plays, open, you know, unscreened here, there, everywhere. I mean, any kind of shot you can imagine, they have it broken down. It's the screened shots where Saros is actually subpar. And, you know, if you're Carolina, no surprise. They're gonna do everything they can to try to get those kind of shots.
They are, and if you're the Predators, like, you've got to take a similar approach to what happened against you in Dallas in 2019. Is you just don't let them get to the middle. I mean, that's easier said than done. And obviously, Carolina's got some guys that can do that pretty well, even though they're not the biggest team. But if you're the Predators, like, you've got to find a way, especially on the power play, to make sure Saros can see the puck. When he sees it, he's going to give yourself a chance. I mean, the way he's played and just how quick he's been laterally with his movement, he's going to have a chance on every shot for the most part if you give him a chance to see the puck. But, I mean, I think back to, you know, the early season struggles on the penalty kill. a lot of those goals were deflections against. And, you know, it's difficult for any goaltender in the league. I mean, we saw it in the Washington-Boston series over the weekend. Oshie lets one go from the point, and Dowd sitting there in front redirects it, and all of a sudden the game's over. Washington's won game one. And you're talking about Tuukka Rask, who's been awesome for Boston the last decade there in goal. So it's been, you know, it's a problem for every goaltender. But I do think, to your point, that's when maybe the height starts to come into play, because Saros is trying to push across and all of a sudden the puck goes the other way and there's just not enough, you know, room for error in terms of recovery there. Like if Pekka is in net in his prime, there have been times where the puck's been redirected and it just hits him. Like he doesn't see it. It just hits him because he's huge in net. You don't have that luxury with UC Saros.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as far as, you know, if you break down his game specifically, you know, the East-West, and John Hines has done it on our show, you know, I mean, his footwork in the crease, his anticipation is elite. You know, his reading of plays is elite. His East-West movement is, I mean, it's got to be great. It's got to be great to make up for those couple inches that you don't have that other goaltenders do. So, and Hines, you know, has talked about if there's a change this year too, it's also just the mental focus of getting ready for each game and being prepared as a starting goaltender, which he has not had to do for a whole year and still hasn't. I mean, that'll be next year, you know, 82 games, but in this condensed schedule, grueling as it was, you know, he brought it every night. So look, it's all, it all bodes well. It's just, look, it's the pressure that starts tonight is just different than anything else. The intensity is different than anything else. This is why we love watching. I couldn't possibly, like, I would watch twice as much playoff hockey as I already have if possible. Like, it's so good. That also makes it so difficult, I think, on goaltenders, you know, to rise up and play their best. So it's going to be very illuminating when it comes to UC Saros here in the few days.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Predators president and CEO Sean Henry. We'll look ahead to the matchup against Carolina with him. Also, some news on the attendance front as well with the Predators in games 3 and 4 at home and potentially in game 6 as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This hour of Robbie and Rex Road is brought to you by Trane. Get a great deal this spring on a new Trane heating and cooling system. At Trane, they test so it runs. Visit traneinfo.com to find your local dealer and learn more. It's hard to stop a Trane.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Talking Nashville Predators, game one of the series tonight against Carolina taking place. And to help us talk about that and much more, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the venerable, the legendary Predators president and CEO, Sean Henry. Sean, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Well, good morning, guys. Before we start, though, I got to give a shout-out to what will become the final carpool of my daughter's elementary school career. They're all listening to you, and we got Jesse, George, JD, and Michael. But the special one goes out to George, who's the star of Grassland Baseball yesterday, with 2 3-run dingers to propel them just 3 wins away from the championship.
Very nice. Nicely done, George. Coming up in the clutch, we appreciate you listening, and congratulations on that wonderful performance. Sean, obviously...
Now I'm back. Now I'm
there. There we go. That's how you set the tone.
Good luck in your finals today.
That's exactly right. That's how you set the tone on the interview. So, Sean, we'll get to the series itself coming up here in just a minute, but I want to get your thoughts on just the way this team closed out the season. I mean, halfway through the season, things weren't going well. I mean, you were frustrated. David Poile was frustrated. You guys were very vocal about your thoughts at that point. And to watch the transformation that's happened since then has been pretty incredible from our standpoint. What's it been like for you guys in the organization to watch this turnaround and to watch this team play the way they did to earn a playoff berth?
Well, it's a combination of emotions, right? It's obviously fun for all of us, but it's also pretty rewarding because, you know, the team the past 25, 30 games is or was playing the way we kind of expected, you know, the team to come together. And it's nice to see that happen. But you're right, you know, back, you know, first 2 months or so of the season, everyone was frustrated. You guys were, fans were, obviously our players, coaches were, we all were. And it's really nice to see the team healthy, everyone, you know, back on the ice and, you know, playing the way we thought they could. It's been really great. And at the beginning of the year, we always talked about our goalie tandem being the force behind the team and where we could land ourselves. And I think you've seen that. You know, we went on that long road trip. Saros was hurt, and Pekka went in there and really put us in this position we're in right now. And then when Saros came back, he's just been on fire. So it really is good to see all the pieces that you put together come into life the way you thought they could or should. And it's a lot more fun this way than the other way, no doubt about that.
Sean, from a business perspective, how big is it to, you know, to get into the playoffs, to now have bigger crowds? And what can you tell us just about the past 14 months, the challenges, and where you guys are now from that perspective?
Yeah, and I appreciate all the conversation, you know, you guys have provided us over the past 14 months, because, you know, past 14 months has not been good for anybody. I don't care what you do for a living, and obviously a lot of people have suffered a lot more than just financial losses. It's just, it's been, you know, the worst year of our lives, and I hope it will be the worst year of our lives for the rest of them. But from a financial standpoint, you know, we're really fortunate. We built something big, something special. We have an incredible ownership group that stood behind every one of our employees, and we had players that went out and made a difference in the community every day, from, you know, the morning after the tornadoes to the morning after the bombings and everything in between. You know, so when you look at the P&L for this year, it's not something I hope we ever see again. It was a bloodbath for everybody. But, again, we built something, and we always said if we do things right, we could be a team that can compete with anyone at any level on any measurement. And I think that's where we are right now. You know, we put ourselves, you know, in the top 10, 12 in the league in virtually every single category, from revenue standpoints to, you know, impressions to ratings and all those good things. So it's important to make the playoffs every year, because to achieve your ultimate goal, you have to be in the real season to move forward and get closer to raising the cup. So that's why making the playoffs is important. From a straight P&L, dollars and cents standpoint, nothing's normal this year. Of course, it's good to have 12,000 people rather than 5,000 or zero. But you know, it's not going to make a huge dent or impact in this year's financials. What it will make is that legacy embrace, that legacy memory. You know, 4, 5, 6, 8 years from now, you're going to have 50,000 people claim to be one of the 12,135 to be there when X happened, or, you know, this is how the series ended. And that's why it's so important, I think. You know, let's face it, you know, streaks are important. You know, when the Red Wings were in the playoffs, I don't know, 25, 26 straight years, and, you know, the first 6, 7, 8, 9 years of that run, they were knocked out in the first, second, third round virtually every year. And then obviously they caught Magic and went on that dynasty run. So this is our 7th year in the postseason, making us second most in the league, tied with Washington behind Pittsburgh. You put yourself in the position of the playoffs every year, and eventually the ultimate goal will follow.
Predators president and CEO Sean Henry on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, Sean, I think back to the first game of the year against Columbus, just being in the building, and it's just silent. I mean, nothing is in there. It was so weird to watch. And then you fast forward to the scene we saw with Pekka in the last game and just the ovation that happened. I mean, it's just night and day, the difference there. So what did you think of just that contrast coming down the stretch, and what can fans expect now that the playoffs are about to be underway with games 3 and 4, potentially game 6 coming up at home in this series as well?
You know, you nailed that spectrum pretty well. What a bizarre, you know, beginning and end, you know, with virtually no fans in the building, piped in noise and music that was awkward at best, to, you know, the Saturday we clinched to Pekka's, you know, such fun game on the last regular season game of the year, where, you know, I think we had 6,000 people in the building for those two games. It sounded like 30,000. And Rob Brindamore talked about how intimidating the crowd was, and he said they only had whatever, you know, 5,000, 6,000. So it really was such a swing in emotions. And that's what makes for great memories, too. Not many people talk about how special it was, you know, when the Yankees tore up 110 wins, or the Dolphins won whatever it was, 15 straight, you know, that year. You talk about the years with the ups and the downs, you know, when the wild card team goes all the way to the Super Bowl, as the Giants have done twice, by the way,
nice.
Or when a 16 beats a 1, like we did against the Blackhawks back in 17. It's those emotional roller coasters that make for memorable seasons that you just get excited about. And let's face it, our 12,000 people will be in the building Friday and Sunday will sound like 50,000. And that's fun when the opposing coach and players are talking about your crowd.
Well, you brought up 2017, John. There's been a lot of discussion about that. Does this remind you of that at all?
You know, it does a little bit. Obviously, if the right thing happens and we find ourselves playing in the finals, then it really will. But a very similar year, you know, during the regular season, beginning of it at least, or we're on that huge bad stretch from late November to early January, and we're out of the playoffs, and there's a lot of frustrations in and around the team. But, you know, we believed in the team and didn't make moves at the trade deadline because we really thought we had a special group. And as the team got a little bit more healthy and you start the playoffs, you know, really anything can happen. So you always hold back to those. You know, it's hard not to compare the two situations. Hopefully, at the end of this first round, we're comparing it even more strongly. But if the wrong thing happens and it doesn't, I think the similarities start and end with, you know, a year that you thought you could have done more in the regular season, but somehow you started playing great hockey, you know, going to the playoffs. So I really do hope it's very, very similar, with the difference being just two more wins in the playoffs as opposed to a dissimilar end.
Sean, last thing for you here. As you look at this series, as you look at the way the team has played, the identity that the team has heading into this matchup, how much credit does John Hines deserve for what we've seen and the turnaround that we've seen with this group, where you feel like this team really has an identity that they've stuck with and that they're going to try to play with heading into this series?
Well, it's something that he and the coaches have talked about, you know, since, you know, pre-camp, you know, back in October, November, and, you know, when David put this type of team together, that this is who we're going to be. We're going to be really, really hard to play against with a lot of skilled players and a good mixture of some youth and some veterans. And you have to give him and the coaches all the credit in the world for putting these guys in the right positions. You know, everyone's on the bus, and it's his job to find the right seat for everybody. And sometimes that doesn't happen as fast as we all want, and really hard to see that happen quickly in a really odd training camp for all of us, and then with all the injuries that we've had. But once things started getting a little bit more stable, where guys were, you know, come back in the lineup a little bit more slowly, I think it made his job not easier, but a little bit more focused on one-on-ones, where each guy coming back in, you know, we're taking on a role to build on that identity that you talked about. And now, you know, that's who we are. You know, we're hard to play against. And again, the last 25, 30 games of the season were just so much fun to watch. I was at the Little League field quite a bit yesterday. It was fun talking to people that aren't the most passionate fans, but, you know, enjoy sports, talking about how much fun this team is to watch. And they're right. The team is a lot of fun. And they're even more fun when the guys are raising their sticks in the air at the end of the game.
Absolutely. And it's going to be fun once again starting tonight for the Predators game one, taking on the Carolina Hurricanes. Predators president and CEO Sean Henry has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sean, really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and enjoy the playoffs starting tonight. Appreciate you, man.
Well, I hope we do. I hope you guys enjoy the playoffs too, and I just want to thank the fans for being so accepting and tolerant from all the policies and protocols we're doing, because they're the reason, their adherence to what we're doing, that we can have one of the largest crowds in the NHL for the playoffs. So I appreciate them. And I'm calling you guys Wednesday morning at 7:30, because you guys know I'm superstitious.
That's right.
And if the right thing happens tonight, we're waking up together every game day. So make sure you're available Sunday morning, too.
Hey, we're all here for that. That's fine with us. Sean Henry, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, Predators president and CEO. And I tell you, Joe, it's going to be a really cool environment. When Game 3 rolls around, obviously we're looking forward to the games tonight in Carolina and in Game 2 as well. But about 12,000 people going to be in the building on Friday and then on Sunday as well. Compared to what we started with this year, that's going to be a heck of an environment coming up in Game 3 starting on Friday.
Yeah, and look, the environment already that the 5,700 to 7,000 range has created.
Yeah.
Like the noise, everything, well beyond what I would have. Oh, to me, I think it's probably going to feel very much like a normal full crowd. It won't quite be there, but it should be pretty special.
When we come back, it is time for the Rex Rant. Joe Rexrode has his rant coming up next. You're not going to want to miss it. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take it.
Ah, yes, time for the Rex Rant. We do this each Monday at 7:45. The Rex Rant takes place. Joe Rex Road. As always, we've got some beautiful music to lead you into your rant today.
That's a very good choice. That always, man, brings me back to high school, getting ready to go to school. Miserable.
Little bit of Kokomo in here today. I don't know why you don't like this song. I think it's great.
Well, I told you. I mean, look, it's pretty bad. But I only hate it because the man, I wish I could remember what station it was exactly. But in high school, you turn it on in the morning. It was like the popular music station. And they would play that song at Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy, I swear, every morning. And then finally, I'm like, why do I keep turning this on? Because it's making me angry before I go to school.
Well, I can see if so they're doing why. It every morning, you develop a certain hatred to the song. So what is today's edition of the Rex Rant, Joe Rexford? What are you fired up about today?
Well, first of all, so Porth, do you have the audio to play?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want me to play it now?
Thank you.
Are we doing it now?
Yes.
Okay. So here's the audio that has Joe Rexrode just fired up today. Ryan Porth, go right ahead.
How much do you worry about the idea of a young player that's used to playing a lot being perhaps left out of the lineup and maybe that leading to some resentment?
So that was our good friend Jared Stillman the other day on the press conference with the Predators. Why does that have you fired up, Joe?
Okay. Listen, you knew that if at some point it was going to come around to me picking on Jared.
I'm really surprised it took this long.
Been trying to hold on. Yeah. But listen, I'm not just picking on Jared here, okay? This is also me picking on one of my least favorite fan concerns in sports, okay? And I'm glad that Jared used the word resentment because it's so dumb. The idea that a coach sitting a player is going to cause that player to like resent the team or organization, or I guess like not give full effort as a result, or you know, or that it will somehow damage the relationship. I mean, I think about that. Like, this is pro sports. These are professional athletes. They get cut all the time. They get traded. They gain money or they lose money based on performance, but to a lesser extent, but to some extent on their professionalism and their willingness to participate in a team environment. That's pro sports. There's no transfer portal here, okay? Now, if you're a college coach in today's atmosphere, you probably need to think a little bit about playing time, depth chart, certain players, they're young, 18 to 22, how they're going to react to news they don't like. You know, you got to keep your backup quarterback. Like, you think about stuff like that, okay? But that's a different world. This world is professional athletics. So, like, if John Hines or David Poyle gave even, like, more than a passing thought to, like, some kind of relationship damage because Tolvin or anyone else would react, you know, how they'd react to not being loud. I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked if it was more than a half second. If anyone in that position, coach or GM in pro sports, makes a lineup decision based on that, then they should not hold those positions. They should not be a coach anymore or a GM anymore. You want to be in the lineup, then play better. Earn your way into lineup. And listen, specifically on Tolvanen, I'm not sure I'd sit him tonight because I want the threat he brings to the power play. But if he does sit, his reaction should be excitement to earn his way back. Resentment means go somewhere else. There's absolutely no room for it, and there should be no consideration given to it. That's all I've got.
Well, and I think also, too, when it comes to this conversation, like, it's one thing with guys that have been there a while, too. Like, if you're sitting down Joe Thornton or somebody like that that's been in the league for 15 years – that's one thing. Like, quite frankly, Ellie Tolvanen, Dante Fabro, if they're not in the lineup, they don't have enough skins on the wall to have resentment. I mean, what have they done at this level that gives them this holier-than-thou attitude. And look, I don't think Tolman feels that way. I don't think Fabro would feel that way. Would they be upset to not be in the lineup? Sure. You want that as a competitor. You don't want anybody that's just happy with being out of the lineup. So there's a difference there between being upset, maybe even being mad, but not being resentful about it. Angry's fine. I would expect that you would be angry if you're not playing. But this idea that all of a sudden that's just going to long-term just totally damage your relationship, that does happen a lot in terms of the fans and the way they think about that. And I just don't understand it. If you're that soft, pro sports is probably not the place for you. Like, it's probably not going to be a career path that works out very well for you at that point.
I mean, and Jared, like that, Jared used his question on that. There are a lot of different ways you could have gone, but he used his question on that. And I, also, by the way, his Wi-Fi was crappy, and he was all breaking up. Now, I can't say anything because my Wi-Fi is crappy today, so I have to.
Was that going to be the secondary part of your rant about his Wi-Fi? And you just had to scrap it?
I was going to lean in a little bit on that. We had a little of course, I immediately tweet shamed him about his Wi-Fi instantly, obviously, at the time, too. But, yeah, I can't talk about that today. So stick with the resentment. It's just like to me, it's insulting that you would think about that. Like, if you're one of those guys who is trying to win at this level, that you would, I mean, again, and if you're worried about that, man, then you don't want him in your organization anyway. And I don't think that's the case. And he better, if this is what happens tonight, then he better respond. Now, we didn't see practice yesterday, you know, in Carolina. I mean, I'm sure that John Hines is keeping it open here. Like, show me something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason these practices, you can use them for that. But if he isn't, then I expect him to respond as well as you would hope, and probably be in the lineup at some point.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Joe, Jared's question is actually next level. You just said that the fans are concerned with this. So Jared is voicing the question from the fan perspective. He already knows the answer. So what do you think about that, Jared's question there being next level?
It's certainly on some level. There's no, I don't know what you call that level, but it's quite a level. I think it's Pred's Facebook level.
Oh, wow. I don't know if I go that far.
Pecorino better be starting tonight. Wow. Is Pecorino going to be mad if he doesn't start tonight? He might be.
Is he going to be resentful, do you think?
I think so. We know how Pekka gets.
That's the word that comes to mind when I think of Pecorino. Just full of resent, that guy.
Big grudge holder, that Pecorino, you know?
That is today's edition of the Rex Rant. You can check it out each Monday at 7:45. Here on Robbie and Rex Road. I still do wonder if you were just going to go off about Jared's Wi-Fi connection and then the last segment just made you scrap that. Was that a part of your plan originally?
If anybody who's closely watching our show, bless your heart if you are, you will notice that I've had a locale change.
It's a
here,
scenery so. Change.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, my face is now closer to the screen, so I'm filling more of the screen with my face. So I apologize for that.
It sounds a lot better this segment,
Joe.
It
does. You sound great.
Well, good. So we've sacrificed the aesthetics with, you know, me right here for some better sound.
That's right. That's what we do here on the program, all for the betterment of the team. When we come back, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators in this series against Carolina. Also, some Titans minicamp over the weekend as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.